The College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. Now here's your host, Kevin Negandhi.
And welcome to the College Football Podcast. David Pollock, Kevin Negandhi with you. We've got a great show today as we get a little bit deeper into the college football rankings. And Andrea Adelson joins us to talk about how the ACC decided to have a bye week for Notre Dame and Clemson, potentially leading into the ACC championship game and the ramifications and the continued fallout between Clemson and Florida State, plus her thoughts on how it personally impacted her watching Sarah Fuller this past weekend kick for Vanderbilt. Ivan Maisel also joining us with his perspective on Alabama and the rebound from a year ago after losing to LSU, and now that they have LSU on the schedule, how both programs are on a completely different track, and what's the key behind what Alabama's doing this season. One last thing before we get started. It's V Week, and during these challenging times, ESPN and the V Foundation's fight against cancer has not stopped. If you're able, please support cancer research by visiting v.org/donate. 100% of what you give goes to cancer research. It's a cause that's near and dear to us here at ESPN, and any contributions are greatly appreciated. Keep that in mind this week. In the meantime, enjoy the podcast and enjoy some back and forth with Pollock and me as we get into it about the conversation surrounding Alabama and Notre Dame and number one. So we tape this on a Wednesday morning, and it gives us enough time to kind of process what we saw last night and wake up today and say, all right, how do we feel? And Pollock, after no surprises, no real surprises when you look at it, but you posted an interesting tweet last night, and I want to go to it because I think this will play into a scenario over the next couple weeks. And you say, who goes into the college football playoff if this happens? Florida beats Bama in the SEC championship. Clemson beats Notre Dame in the ACC championship. Ohio State wins out. Go. This is saucy here. What do you think? And playing these scenarios out with the tweet you put out there, are you implying Ohio State wins the Big Ten championship? They get enough games to qualify? Because if they qualify and they get enough games and they go undefeated, they're getting in no matter what.
Are you sure? Okay. So 7-0 Ohio State versus 10-1 Alabama. Who's in?
Pollock, very good point, but I could tell you this.
Answer the question.
Ohio State is ranked fourth by playing only four games. If you add three more games and a conference championship, they're getting in.
Kevin, the
drop-off.
Stop. Simmer down, Simba. Who are you putting in, Alabama or Ohio State right there? Who's the better?
Tell me the score of the Florida-Alabama game. Because also there's a blemish.
37-34.
Okay, and there's a blemish on Alabama's schedule and their record. And there's a blemish where Alabama doesn't have a conference championship that Ohio State would.
Okay. Can you answer the question, or are you still going to talk about like all the details of it?
I answer the question. Okay. Ohio State gets in.
You think Ohio State over Alabama if Ohio State lost? Okay, so who's Ohio State's best win?
It depends.
Let me paint this why. We're gonna do the if, ands, and buts game because you don't want to answer the question. That's great. Listen, here's the facts. If we get to the facts right now, who has the best wins in the country by a landslide right now?
Notre Dame.
Alabama. Notre Dame has the best singular win, correct, against Clemson with a backup quarterback, which we have to add in there, right? Like that has to be part of the discussion. Alabama's got a win over a top five team in A&M, a throttling, a top nine team in Georgia, a double digit victory. And now you're telling me if you lose another top, 20-30 team with Auburn. So it's the best trio of wins. If you're going to go to the next, the Notre Dame beat Clemson, do we have to add the caveat or does it need to be on there? I mean, I feel like I have to have it on there, correct?
But I've got to tell you this. If Ohio State has a conference championship and Alabama doesn't, Ohio State's getting in over Alabama because the committee is going to view and carry the weight of you've won a conference championship.
I don't agree with you. I don't agree. I don't agree with a 6-0 Ohio State being in the college football playoff automatically over a Bama team that might be 10-1. I just don't see that. I don't. It's cut and dry to me. That's why this debate's fun. It's not cut and dry. You can't. I don't think that. Here's the thing. If you look at Alabama, boom. They're obviously. I want to look at what people have done. Okay, you know how I am. That's a big deal with me. So you beat A&M, you beat Georgia, you beat Auburn. Your three best wins. If I'm Notre Dame, I beat Clemson, the best win of the season, with a caveat. I beat North Carolina, which is a good win. Who's my next best win? FSU, Pitt, Boston College. Okay, Clemson. I beat Miami again. So this is what we have to do. We have to go through resumes, right? Clemson. I beat Miami. Who's Clemson's next best win? Boston College, Pittsburgh. Yeah. Like those are 2 and 3. Like Clemson hasn't beaten anybody besides Miami that's really good. I question whether Miami's even that good, to be honest. So, I mean, I just think that now you go to Ohio State. What's Ohio State's best win? Like right now, it's Indiana. Did they look good? Did they look good against Indiana? Do you feel more confident about Ohio State leading that game? So I just think, and if you're telling me they're going to get to 6, you know, possibly 7, to me, I think that scenario is a nightmare for the committee.
You know what's going to be the real nightmare here? The nightmare will be if Ohio State doesn't play in the next 2 weeks and they miss one game, right? And then they potentially play Wisconsin on December 19th because they don't get to the Big Ten championship game because they don't have enough. They can't qualify, right? And then they go 6-0. And that Wisconsin game potentially is viewed as a better matchup and more respect than the Northwestern game because it's
even though Northwestern beat the crap out of them.
Yes,
but yeah, I digress.
Playing the scenario up, right? And they go 6-0, and then Florida beats Alabama. So then Alabama doesn't have a conference championship. Ohio State doesn't have a conference championship. Ohio State's undefeated. It will be interesting to see how the committee would play that out because, again, you raise a good topic here because when you're number one right now for Alabama, it feels like they have something secure and locked up, right?
I feel like they're an overwhelming number one. I feel like it's an overwhelming number one and 2 and 3 play.
You don't think Notre Dame's closer to Bama? The gap is that big?
I think it's very clear there's a big gap between Alabama and Notre Dame. Very clear.
Now, are you saying that from your eye test, or are you saying that from the committee's viewpoint?
I'm saying from what they've done on the field and from the eye test, there's a very clear gap between Alabama and everybody else.
Do you disagree? I think Notre Dame is much closer to Alabama than you think. Do you think the committee is overvaluing that A&M victory over Florida? Do you think the committee putting them at 5 is overvaluing how they view Texas A&M?
I don't think it matters because I think Florida has an opportunity to – I think they have an opportunity right now to say, all right, guys, I don't think A&M is better than Florida, but I do think they beat them head-to-head. So right now I can let head-to-head carry the day. But it doesn't matter in the end because if Florida beats Alabama in the SEC championship game, now you have a three-way tie where they all beat each other. And so now you can say, who's the better team? Well, who's got the best win? Florida. They beat Alabama. I don't think the committee – do you look at A&M and go, this team is a great team?
No.
I think they're really good. You have to – I respect what Jimbo Fisher's built in his tenure. But, I mean, Kellen Mond is the same guy we've seen for the last 3 seasons. He's very hit or miss. He's very up and down. The quarterback play is inconsistent. So, you know, I'm okay with A&M being ahead. By the way, Florida controls their destiny. A&M doesn't, which is crazy because one's ranked higher, which is kind of nuts. Well, I think it's very interesting, by the way, with the 1A, 1B Alabama, Notre Dame. Who has a better defense, Kevin?
Oh, man, that's a pretty good conversation because I think
who has a better defense?
They're both outstanding. If I had to pick a defense to win a game, it would be Alabama.
Okay. Who has a better offense?
Alabama.
But there's not clear separation because Kevin wants to play the we need to do the 1A, 1B game.
No,
if you think Alabama's better on offense, okay, who has the better coach, Kevin?
Listen, you're asking me rhetorical questions because you know the answer. I am not playing the, hey, 1A, 1B thing. I'm just saying the gap is a little bit closer than the way you play it out, that it's 1 and then everybody else. I think that 1 and 2 is a lot closer than how you're expressing
it. But you think Alabama's better coached, has a better offense, and has a better defense. But it's really it's a close gap. But
it's a close gap.
I give the edge to Alabama in every category, but it's a close gap.
Yes, exactly.
I hear you.
I can do that, you little freaking sarcastic punk. I can do that. And you can still believe that there's one guy or one team that deserves to be number one, but the gap is not as wide as I think in years past on how you would view Notre Dame to Alabama. That I don't believe that. So we'll get the chance to see this again in these teams.
You know what's interesting about this scenario too, by the way, homie, is Indiana now without Penix.
Oh,
and they have an opportunity to lose maybe more games than they would. How far do they fall? You know, does that affect Ohio State? Is that their best win? You know, I think that's another thing to keep an eye on, you know, with the committee. But I hope we get something like this scenario. This would be amazing. And by the way, we're not, you know, look at what happens now with Clemson and Trevor Lawrence back and obviously Skowski back and getting these healthy guys back. It's a totally different defense. It's a totally different offense. And now we get to see Notre Dame Clemson round two, which could lead to round three, which is nuts. That's just insane.
And Andrew Adelson will join us later in the podcast on the ACC deciding that Clemson and Notre Dame will have a bye week before the title game. That is if Clemson beats Virginia Tech on Saturday night. I do want to get your thoughts here on another scenario. If Notre Dame beats Clemson twice, is Clemson out?
Yes.
Just they're done. You just move on, right? No matter what.
And here's why. Because now I go back to that list. Okay. We beat Miami and we beat who else? Like, as much as now, listen, the brand names in college football, if you don't think they carry weight with the committee, you're wrong. Like, they do. Brand names carry weight, pedigree carry weight. But the committee is very much, they have to believe in who you've beaten. They have to believe, like, Clemson has a asterisk or a they have a quote unquote mulligan right now. Like they lost, but they're still ahead of Ohio State because I think the committee goes, there's no Trevor Lawrence. This is a different team without Trevor Lawrence. So maybe that plays into account more. But no, I think if they lose twice to Notre Dame, you can't put them in the two or three spot, or, you know, maybe you put them in the four spot versus Alabama, but there would have to be a lot of other factors to me outside of that would get Clemson in, because again, their best win would be Miami and then some form of Boston College, Pitt, something like that when you're throwing their resume up there.
Couple of other observations from last night, how North Carolina can move up two spots despite losing to Notre Dame, and BYU moves up one spot. And that felt like, hey, we heard from everybody, but you're not going to change our opinion on how we view BYU. We'll move them up to 13, but that's about it. The other thing that was lurking, I felt like the Big 12 had a big night. I mean, for Iowa State to jump four spots inside the top 10, that is a huge deal for Oklahoma to potentially have a top 10 on their upcoming schedule. How do you view that playing out?
A top 10, the ability to avenge a loss, the ability, by the way, if you're watching Oklahoma, they're showing a lot of growth on the defensive side of the football, a lot. I mean, like to the point where I almost trust them. And this is the team that last time we saw them in the playoff, they gave up like 7,000 points to LSU. LSU could have scored with me and you in there. I mean, it's ridiculous. Like it was bad. So I think Iowa State in a good position. Georgia's above them. They can't do anything. Cincinnati would be the wild card above them, with Cincinnati maybe, you know, has an opportunity to play Tulsa twice. You know, the Florida A&M thing would take care of itself. But if A&M wins out, or is Iowa State or Oklahoma going to get enough to move above A&M? Like, that would be an obstacle, a barrier. So there's a lot of barriers, but I do think the Big 12 has a tremendous amount of respect, and you've seen them. They're in a better position. We thought they were dead, and listen, they're still on a stranded island without any food or water, but there's a chance that they got a flare gun. You know, and maybe somebody drives by and maybe they can shoot that thing up in the air and get saved, but it still doesn't look good, but it's better than it was.
You know, this is a week where obviously things are different, but this is a week on the schedule we would have much of the conversation about LSU versus Alabama. My, how things have changed in the landscape when it's not even going to create any type of buzz, because Game day will be at Coastal Carolina. And it's, to me, pretty cool to see Coastal Carolina at 18 facing a Liberty team that was that lost by 1 point, a heartbreaker to NC State, or they would have been undefeated coming in. And you have Jamie Chadwell's offense versus Hugh Freeze's offense. I can't wait just because I think the country has heard a lot about these two teams, but the chance that you can showcase both of them and the way the offenses look, I'm just going to set the stage for you because you're going to be talking about it on Saturday. Chadwell's offense versus Hugh Freeze's offense. And is this just a defensive coordinator nightmare?
100%. And by the way, I'm doing a tape on Coastal Carolina's offense this weekend for game day. And I've tried to contextualize what I'm seeing because I've never seen it before. I've never seen Coastal Carolina's offense. At any level, I've never seen the ability to do what they do and to do what they do. I think it's a credit to them because I think they look at their running back spot and say, these guys are our best playmakers. So not only am I going to hand them the ball a lot, I'm going to throw them a lot. But here's what I want you to think about when you think about Coastal Carolina. I want you to think about triple option Navy Army. Okay? And now I want you to think about new school concepts, passing game, spreading the ball out, throwing the ball in the passing game. So it's morphing two systems, which has never been done, by the way. Paul Johnson couldn't do it. You know, Munkin can't do it. Like, all the great Georgia Southerns, all those teams have always been really good at the triple option, but they could never throw the football. And now McCall's a big, strong kid that can run, but the way they're throwing their passing game, I can guarantee you one thing. This offense will be everywhere in college football next year. This offense will be all over the place. Like, it is that kind of good with what they do with their schemes and the way they use their running backs and the way they run triple option with split flow and a guy going across the formation differently. And then they run a form of triple option and throw it to the backs going up the seam. And then they run QB RPO or QB draw RPO where they're running the running back straight up the seam. They do so much to you, but they make it where it's high percentage throws over the middle to backs and make the concepts, you know, wheels and different concepts in the new school offense. And so it's kind of old school offense mixed with new school to give you a really big pain in the butt is what it is.
I love it. I can't wait for that matchup. I think it'll be really, really cool to see the chess pieces as you guys are going to be there for the first time highlighting the Chanticleers. And honestly, we may not see these two coaches at these two programs next season, the way they're rising and their names are coming back in coaching circles with openings down the road. The dude of the week, I gave you a homework assignment, and it's Jared Patterson of Buffalo. And I'm just glad that I love Maction on Tuesday and Wednesday nights. It's great they get their own night on ESPN and ESPN2, and you can watch the entire conference. But I'm kind of glad on Saturday Patterson got the chance to play against Kent State because he was on all the highlight shows. He was our primetime performer on ABC after rushing for 409 yards on 36 carries and tying a major college football record with 8 touchdowns. And if you look at the totals, 710 yards in the last 2 weeks. One's been better.
That's a season, bro. Yeah. That's a season for people.
Man, who's 5'9", but he doesn't look like he's 5'9". He just looks like a bigger Darren Sproles.
Yeah, he's 5'9", 200 pounds. But watching the offense, first of all, they block the piss out of it up front. Like, Buffalo is very physical. They do a good job. A lot of those touchdown runs, there's a lot of backs in the country that could get it done. But I think the thing that sticks out to me is he's got sneaky power. These aren't runs where he's just bouncing the football all over the place. Like, he stays very disciplined. He keeps his shoulder square to the line. He runs physical. He can make you miss. He can run you over. He's got a little bit of an attitude to him, which I really, really like. But it was cool because I'm watching the last two games, fully hand in the air, by the way. I'll admit I'm not watching Buffalo on a weekly basis. I'm not. Okay. But I watched 2 weeks ago and he wore 26. And then this past week he was wearing 41. And so it kind of threw me off. I'm like, wait a minute, what am I confused? These guys are really good. Like, what happened? And so he wore 41 to honor a past teammate, Solomon Jackson, who had died because of a heart-related issue in 2016. That's what Buffalo does to honor him. So how about that? Breaks the record that day while he's wearing 41 to honor a a past teammate. But it just incredible two-game stretch. To me, you want a comparison, because I love to do that, by the way. He's Giovanni Bernard type player, like small, thick, can make you miss, can run you over, really, really good back that can get yards that aren't there consistently. So it's not just like all those numbers aren't just because of a bunch of carries over and over. He's making big play after big play and making people miss and running people over. It's really fun to watch.
Yeah, he's having huge runs too. Like it felt like we were watching a high school game, right? Where you got the running back.
His last one, he broke like three tackles. Like his last one, he literally got hit at the line of scrimmage on third and short and broke a couple tackles and took it, you know, 60 yards to the house. So he's definitely fun to watch, and his patience and his ability to make big plays has been pretty cool. You just take 700 yards in 2 weeks.
Really? It's unbelievable. And we get the chance to watch him, of course, this coming weekend against Ohio. So good luck to him as they continue a run there at Buffalo 4-0 this season. Let's get to our picks. Because, hey, by the way, Taylor, we're what, 4-2, both of us last week. And let me tell you, I was the biggest Wildcat fan this side of the Mississippi, because man, when they were taking on Baylor, I was feeling so good. And then it was back and forth. And I was like, I'm going to go 5-1. And I'm going to just crush Pollock. And then what a win for Baylor to come back and get that W. So we both went 4-2 and,
we both pulled our upsets.
Yes, we did.
I had Iowa State and you had Stanford. So they both, by the way, did you see how you won the Stanford game, by the way?
Yeah, that yeah, exactly. Wow. And by the way, you got a gift in the Texas game. I mean, what's Tom Herman doing? Just kick the field goal.
How did I get a gift? Oh, get out of here.
Oh, God.
Dude, they're Texas. Texas would have found a way to lose that regardless. Get out of here.
One day down the road, we'll talk a little bit about the Texas situation moving forward. So let's get our picks here. And let's start with the Friday night game on ESPN. Louisiana, number 25 in the land, 8-1, taking on Appalachian State, which is 7-2, and App's favored by 2.5 points because the game's in Boone, North Carolina. Who you got in this one?
Boone, North Carolina. Listen, Louisiana, it's interesting. They beat Iowa State, remember, convincingly, I think by 17 to start the season. And they couldn't even get ranked. And Iowa State's moving up the charts and moving up the charts. And Louisiana's finally in the top 25, you know, rightfully so, because they handled Iowa State pretty good to start. But I love App State. I love their culture. I love who they are. I love what they are. When they played Coastal, by the way, a couple weeks ago, it was a really good contest, really competitive game till the very end. I don't think Louisiana's offense is not on Coastal's level. And App State, they're not ready for App State. I'll take App State.
Ooh, that's a good one. I'm going with Louisiana. So we're out the gate.
You need to do something, bro. You can't just sit here and agree with me all day long.
I'm 7-back, man. Again, listen, I'm coming in.
I'm 7-back. No big deal.
Yeah, the last couple of weeks, I've showed up. Trust me. We're still in the third quarter. All right. Let's go to A&M at Auburn. A&M, number 5 in the country, of course. Some people have circled this game as, could A&M be shocked here? It's on the Plains. A&M favored by 7. And we do a straight up. We don't take the points or give the points, all that stuff. I'm going to go with A&M just because I trust Kellen Mond over Bo Nix.
Really?
Yeah.
You know, I feel like they're kind of the same player, actually. I feel like they're very – very, very similar. I guess you trust Bo Nix's 10 touchdowns and 7 interceptions to Kellen Mond's 16-2. That's interesting.
Yeah, I trust. I trust Kellen Mond over Bo Nix. That's the difference.
My bad. Okay, my bad.
I thought you were saying you trust Bo Nix.
My bad.
No, I trust Kellen Mond.
I was trying to not be insulting, but I was like, wait a minute. All right. Listen, I don't trust either team. But I trust Texas A&M's ground game. Tank Bigsby's, by the way, is banged up for Auburn. He doesn't look the same as he did earlier in the year when he was just running through everybody. But I do think this will be a very competitive, very close game, but I'll take A&M.
Yeah. We're on the same page here. Oh, now we've got some good ones here. These next two, good luck, flip a coin. Nebraska at Purdue.
Oy.
Purdue's favored by 2.
Ugh.
He's right. Exactly.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, exactly. That's
listen,
going first.
Listen, I don't I don't trust either team wholeheartedly. Purdue got absolutely hosed in the Minnesota game. I thought it was just awful. But I trust Purdue maybe a little bit more offense, more playmaking, more consistency. Listen, Purdue, and if you look at Purdue, you think about their losses. They lost to Northwestern by 7. It's not like they got road graded. It was a pretty good game, and they lost to Minnesota by 3. And last week to Rutgers. But every time they're always in the 30s. They're always scoring 30. So I don't know if Nebraska can do that. I'll take Purdue.
Taking Purdue. Just right. Nebraska's showed me nothing the minute I feel like, okay, I'm going to be a little comfortable, nothing. All right, here's a good one. We're going to stay in the conference. Maryland at Michigan. Michigan favored by 4.5.
You're up.
Oh, man. Oh, man, I can't trust Michigan with anything. I'm going with Maryland. The reason why is I'm going to – Talia Tungavailoa, if it's going to come down to him, Michigan – if McNamara is 100% healthy, different offense. He wasn't 100% healthy at the Penn State game, in and out. So I'm going with Maryland as the underdog.
And by the way, I owe the world an apology for saying Talia.
Yep, Talia.
For saying Talia was a baller on national television and then him to go out there and do that versus Indiana. Like, I owe the world an apology. Like,
he has his moments. He's learning.
I'm telling you, I owe the world an apology because he's not a baller. He has the tools to become a baller, and he might one day get to that point. But he was very bad against Indiana. Very bad. Turning the football over, not good with his reads, missing open guys. Like, it was... it was bad. It wasn't good. I'm going to trust that he learns from that. So I'm with you. I trust Maryland more. I think offensively that he has the ability to make plays. Michigan, I don't know if they have that ability consistently to make plays. So I'll take the Terps reluctantly, very reluctantly.
Yeah, but here's the thing, too. I can't trust Michigan's defense on
any, no.
Right?
And here's the thing. Here's what I know. I trust Locksley's offense. And I think this will be made more easy for Tungavailoa this week because now he's going to know what's coming. Indiana mixes things up so daggum well. One of the Cain Womack, by the way, is their DC. He's 33. He's one of the best in the country. I mean, he is phenomenal. He is so good at what he does. But I don't – Don Brown's the other end of that spectrum. He's like 70. He's not that young, and he's very old school, and you know what you're going to get, and you can kind of formation them and make things easy. And when a quarterback knows what they're getting, I think you'll see a better Tungavailoa.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you. Oklahoma, 15th in the land, on the road at TCU. They're favored by 2.5.
I'm sorry.
It was that much of a difference. You're right. Oklahoma State, 2.5.
Big difference.
On the road.
It shows you that we really share these picks in the beforehand and we really know what's going on. So who was Oklahoma State last week? Like, how does that happen?
Texas,
by the way?
Tech. I have no idea, right? Like,
you score 50. Like, you don't have a pulse and you score 50. But again, it was big plays. And by the way, Chuba Hubbard doesn't play.
Nope.
Remember that, right? He doesn't play. Desmond Jackson comes in and rushes for over 200 yards and by far has been the best, most productive outing, period. Like, period. I will take Oklahoma State in this ballgame. I will take Oklahoma State for one reason. I think TCU's offensive line is really bad. Now, they have Max Duggan and they have playmakers and they have enough skill to make you pay, but I don't think they can block them up front good enough. So I'll take Oklahoma State.
Yeah, I'm with you. Oklahoma State. That line, though, it makes you pause. It feels like that should be a line that's like 7, and you're like, whoa, why is it at 2.5? What are we doing? West Virginia at Iowa State. West Virginia on the road. Iowa State favored by 7. I'm taking Iowa State. They're playing on a different level. I'm not sure if they're a top 10 team right now, but they are playing at a different level. So I'm going with Iowa State.
Man, I tell you what, this is a bad matchup for Iowa State, though. I do think Iowa State, and I will trust my boy Breece Hall because I am president of the fan club. Mm-hmm. But West Virginia is a really good defense. The Steeles brothers inside are animals. And Iowa State is predicated on running the football. That's what they do. Brock Purdy's good, too. Don't get it twisted. He's really good. But I don't think they're not an explosive offense. They're not an offense that can go down the field. West Virginia can play defense with this. I think this is more low scoring. West Virginia can't run the football against good teams. And Iowa State's dang sure not going to let them. So I think this is a low scoring affair, though. I don't think this will be high scoring. I don't think this will be a blowout. I think this will be a good competitive game like it was last week against Texas.
Okay, and our last one here, and I'm going to bring this up just because who knows what we're going to get from either of these teams. Texas is favored by 10 at Kansas State.
Here you go. So
I'm going, Texas.
Let's give some context now, too, Kevin. Opt-outs, offensive lineman opting out, best safety opting out for Texas.
I was just about to say, I'm going Texas as a pick'em. There is no way I would lay 10 points for Texas on the road coming off that heartbreaker against Iowa State. The only reason why is Sam Ehlinger. That's the only reason why I'm picking the Longhorns.
Do you know who Texas's leading rusher is?
I could look it up, but I can already just probably say it's maybe Sam Ehlinger.
Yeah, I want you to look it up real quick and see if this is right. I don't think he has over 400 yards rushing, and I think he's leading the team in rushing.
He's got 388 yards, and Bijan Robinson, who's going to be a stud, I mean, over time, he has 348, but you're right. You're Texas, and your leading rusher has 388 yards, and it's your quarterback.
Well, that's embarrassing. I mean, it's bad. That's not good. I mean, it's bad.
And that was in the beginning of the season, that was a huge question mark, right? Running back, hey, did they figure it out? Could they figure it out? And they still could not figure it out to help Ehlinger.
No, and it's interesting to watch Texas and where they're at with Tom Herman and where they go in the future, because I wouldn't be surprised if they made a change. But it's a non-explosive offense. Again, I probably said that on here before, but that's the most puzzling part to me with Tom Herman is I felt like he always had an unbelievable ability to coach quarterbacks, and he would get whoever it was, whether it's Greg Ward, he'd get whoever it was to be dynamite and to be electric and to be dynamic. And they're an okay offense, but the good thing for them this week is, and the good thing for the rest of Texas this season, by the way, is they stay in the state of Kansas. They're playing Kansas State, and they're playing Kansas. So Texas can finish on a high note after losing to Iowa State, because they're playing two football teams that have a combined 4 wins.
Yeah, and then they can get to 7-3. But Kansas State, I predict Kansas State will have a special teams return for a touchdown. The Tom Herman question and conversation will be for another day, but just keep this in mind while people talk about it. The buyout for him and the staff, I think, is $24 million. Not saying Texas doesn't have money, but
that's a lot, bro.
Just to buy those guys out. And then who's next, right? Who do you want to bring in? And, of course, Urban Meyer would be the biggest, the hottest, the name that everybody's talking about. Do you kick the tires with a guy like Matt Campbell, which would be interesting because I think Matt Campbell can go to bigger things.
First of all, that's not kicking the tires. Like that's a home run. That's all four tires on the road going 90,000 miles an hour. Like,
but
that would
that's
be
a question.
Insane.
Does Matt Campbell want that, or does Matt Campbell want to look at the other options? Because I think he will.
How about $24 million to buy out coaches, Kev? Mm-hmm. We're in a pandemic. Mm-hmm. The budgets are cut and slashed, and everything is way down. To make that move, you'd have to be so confident that he is not the guy. It'd be insane. Like, mm-hmm. I don't see it happening because of that. I mean, it's just, that's a lot in this time to do and get and say, and I don't think that'll happen. But if you're going to give me Matt Campbell, if I was a Texas donor, and some of them dudes, by the way, they have billions. Okay,
that's what I'm saying. 24 million dropped.
Yeah, and by the way, what did A&M do? What did little brother do down the road?
Oh, they backed up the Brinks truck.
They backed up the Brinks truck. They got a really good coach that had won a national title. And they're number 5 in the country. You ain't sniffed number 5 in the country in a hot minute. You're not relevant anymore. Like, maybe it's time to do something outlandish and something crazy, you know?
That's why I would think it would be Urban, and Urban would be the number one target if he wants to come back. And then the other option, I mean, there's another name, Mario Cristobal.
No.
And what he can do. No?
No.
You don't think so?
If you're going to give me Campbell, I take Campbell. Campbell's one. Campbell's the guy to me. Like, to get, again, I want, here's what I want, Kevin. If I'm at Texas, first of all, I got to realize I don't get the same elite talent I used to get. Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's put that in there. I want a guy that has proven to me that they can get, if their roster says 8 wins, they're going to get 10. If their roster says 10 wins, they're going to get 11. They're going to, you know, I want that kind of coach. And I want a coach that has vision that's going to embrace that kind of stuff and embrace development and stuff like that. And I just think, I don't think there's anybody better than Matt Campbell for that.
Good stuff, brother. Have a good week and enjoy the experience at Coastal. I think it's such a unique environment. Unfortunately, you won't have the fans there, but at the same time, it's pretty cool that game day can showcase a program like that right now.
Yeah, if the fans were there, it'd be one of those all timers. You know, that is what stinks. I wish the fans were there, but it'd still be fun.
All right, brother. Be good.
Peace.
And it's great to have Andre Adelson, college football reporter, joining us now with the very latest on the ACC making an interesting announcement last night. Schedule changes, which it felt like, okay, well, we're lining things up and they want an even playing field when they allowed Notre Dame to clinch a spot in the ACC championship game. And the idea that Clemson does not play the week of December 12th. What was your first thought, and what more can you tell us about creating this open date there before? And let me preface by saying this. That is if Clemson beats Virginia Tech this weekend, because then Miami enters the conversation. But your first reaction when the story came out and how the conference is handling this?
I was not surprised at all to see the changes the conference made. And this seemed inevitable even before the Florida State-Clemson game was postponed and obviously has now since been canceled, because Clemson always had an open date there on December 12th. And when the Florida State game did not happen, they were adamant that they were going to keep that open date on December 12th. Notre Dame had its game against Wake Forest scheduled in September, pushed to December 12th. So if you're Notre Dame, are you going to sit there and say, hey, you know what? It's cool. Clemson can keep that open date and we'll just play on December 12th. It's totally fair and reasonable. Yeah, no. So in order to make things as fair and reasonable as possible for the two highest ranked teams in the ACC, Notre Dame and Clemson, the league decided, okay, we're just going to leave that as an open date. Now, if you're Miami and you're one of the three teams now at the top of the league that has a case potentially to be in the ACC championship game, you're still playing 10 conference games and Notre Dame and Clemson are only playing 9. So if anybody has anything to complain about, it's probably Miami at this point. Now, granted, they lost head to head to Clemson, and Clemson obviously owns the tiebreaker over Miami. They both have one loss right now. But if Clemson loses to Virginia Tech, now Miami has to win its next two games against Duke and North Carolina. And if they do that, they're in the ACC championship game, but Clemson's obviously a heavy favorite against Virginia Tech. Notre Dame's already clinched that spot in the ACC championship game. So I think if it goes as expected and as the league expects, having that open date next weekend best serves both of the teams that are trying to make it into the college football playoff.
Yeah, and the very real possibility that we have two teams from the conference making the playoff, right? Because if Clemson beats Notre Dame, it feels like Notre Dame's already secured a spot in the playoff. And now, if they lose by 40 or 30 to Clemson, then it's a different conversation as we see how things play out. But it feels like if Notre Dame, you know, loses to Clemson in a close game, will you have the conversation suddenly shift here? Because how the committee's viewed Clemson, even with the loss of Trevor Lawrence in that game, they were still 3 in the initial rankings and 3 last night. That the committee thinks highly of Clemson in playing a scenario out where both teams would make it if Clemson beats Notre Dame.
Absolutely. That's the way that I see it right now as well. And remember back in July or August when it was announced that Notre Dame was going to join the league for this one time only because of these pandemic circumstances, and everybody's like, well, what's in it for everyone? This, this scenario right here is what's in it for everyone. You have Notre Dame with the potential to be in the playoff as a one-loss team, which would not have happened under other circumstances as an independent. I think we all believe that Notre Dame has to be perfect and undefeated every single year as an independent to make it in. And then you've got Clemson sitting there as the preseason favorite, also with an opportunity to make the playoff. You know, the ACC has been ridiculed for years now for having Clemson and everybody else, and there's nobody else who can be a playoff contender from the ACC. And now here you have this one exceptional circumstance where you can potentially get two ACC teams into the playoff based on what happens in the ACC championship game. This is the scenario everybody wanted before the season started and kind of expected to see before the season started. And it has played out in front of our eyes. And now I do think if Clemson wins based on what has happened everywhere else and what these rankings look like, to me, one loss Notre Dame would be in. I can't imagine that they'd put in one loss A&M in there if there was a one loss A&M. The only scenario where that may or may not change, but even then, if it's Florida, for example, that beats Alabama, okay, what happens with Ohio State? But I still think that Notre Dame still would be in as a one-loss team if they were to lose. And so the best-case scenario for the ACC is to give these two teams a rest next week, game in the ACC championship game, and if Clemson were to win, to get two teams in the playoffs.
Yeah, because no matter what, it's December 2nd, and if you look at this entire season that's played out, Notre Dame has the best quality win. And plain and simple, among all the teams, they have the best win, and that is beating Clemson in overtime, even without Trevor Lawrence and even without some stars on their defensive side. That they proved to a lot of people that they belong. And then I think following up on what they did against North Carolina in that second half and how they showed out with their defense. And that was a strong victory for Notre Dame when it comes to just backing things up and saying, hey, we're legit, not just on the offensive side. Our defense is pretty darn strong on how we handled Sam Howell and company. How's it, you know, being in the ACC and covering it, how's it been playing out among coaching circles as well as executives around the league, what has taken place between Florida State and Clemson and the back and forth, especially now that things have died down, but you can still feel a little twinge?
Yes, and Dabo, I think, got in one last little dig yesterday during his press conference, and hopefully everybody has moved on now that this game has been officially canceled and Florida State has got two teams added to their schedule to play it out. And I asked Mike Norvell, why was it important for you to continue playing games after what's happened the last few weeks? And he just said, we're competitors. We want to play. They're going to play Duke. They're going to play Wake Forest. And even though things have not been great for them, they want to have as full a season as they possibly can with so many young players to get them ready and prepared now for the future seasons under Mike Norvell. But in terms of the perception around the league, I think there was a lot of anger over the testing protocols. There were many coaches and administrators that I talked to who said, we predicted a scenario like this was going to happen. When you put in the protocols at the beginning of the season to say, we're going to have an independent third party do the testing the day before games, but you're not going to be able to get those test results until after you've traveled to your location, that opened the door for the potential for games to be canceled the morning of kickoff. And that's what we saw now 2 weeks in a row for the ACC, both involving Florida State. Obviously, we had what happened with Clemson when their doctors could not agree after Clemson had a player who tested positive and they did not find those results out until they arrived in Tallahassee. And then last weekend, Florida State had to cancel a game with Virginia because they didn't get their results back from Friday testing until Virginia had already traveled to Tallahassee. And clearly having that happen 2 weeks in a row was something that the ACC felt they had to make a change and do something after they had gotten many, many complaints about this. And look, I understand why they did it. Their medical advisory group wanted to get the tests as close to kickoff as possible so that they could be assured that the players playing were going to be negative for the coronavirus. But when you decided to get the third party to do it, those tests had to be shipped back to a lab in North Carolina. That's why it took so long to get those results. And that's why you didn't have them till late Friday night, sometimes early Saturday morning. That's why those games were impacted. So the ACC now has gone ahead and made a change there for testing to be done on Thursdays. So that way those results are back before any travel can happen for these next few weeks in the season, just to be able to assure that they can do their best to get these games in as scheduled. And I think a large reason is because of the outcry that followed what happened with Florida State and Clemson. I think a lot of people thought worst case scenario, a game could be canceled on game day. I don't think anybody actually thought it possible until it happened. And when it turned as ugly as it did, it became clear that the ACC had to go ahead and try and do something to rectify the situation.
Yeah, the visual that will stick with me, it's not like the Mayflower trucks when the Colts left Baltimore. It was though the truck, the Clemson equipment truck, just leaving Tallahassee that morning. You're like, oh, there it goes. They're not going to play. That made it official that they weren't going to play just hours before kickoff, as they called it off on game day. The other big story this past week was in the SEC and all of college football. And it's going to continue to be a story because Sarah Fuller is expected to continue as Vanderbilt's place kicker Saturday against Georgia. She became the first female or woman to play in a Power 5 football game, delivering that second half kickoff against Missouri, a design squib kick. And if you're wondering why she didn't get the chance to kick a field goal, because if you've watched Vanderbilt football, it's tough to maintain anything in their opponent's territory on offense. So fingers crossed that they could do it against Georgia, as Vanderbilt interim coach Todd Finch told reporters yesterday that Fuller's practicing with the team. She's on the travel roster. None of the specialists who missed last week's game due to COVID-19 protocols has returned. So this is a big deal because it for many reasons, it's how Fuller, I thought, responded when the team needed her, because she was not planning on doing this. This was 6 days after winning a conference championship as the goalkeeper for Vandy's soccer team. And then she comes on board, and I thought she handled things so well leading up to it, during the game, and in every single interview. She was not fazed by anything. It was just really refreshing. It was just like, yeah, this is what we do. This is what I did, and I did my job. How did it hit in your household? Because you have a piece coming out later this week, and it felt really special inside your home. And tell us a little bit why.
You know, I've seen moments like this, right, where women have had these opportunities in football games, and every time it happened, I was so excited and I cheered, and it was a wonderful moment for women who are trying to knock down barriers. And as a woman who writes about a sport played by men in a business that has many more men than women in it, I feel a certain kinship for women who are going out there and showing the courage and the confidence to be able to say, hey, I'm just as good as you and I deserve this opportunity. But on Saturday, I told my two daughters, they're 12 and 9, okay, I've got these ACC games to watch, but I'm going to be flipping over to Vanderbilt today because there's going to be a female who is going to kick for them. And my 9-year-old starts chanting, I want to see Herstory. I want to see Herstory. And it was such a cool moment because every other time this has happened, I saw it on my own or I thought about it on my own. But now here I had this opportunity to talk about it with my own two daughters. And as I kept flipping back and forth and keeping them updated, realized, okay, it's going to happen here for the second half kickoff. I called them over, they sat on the couch with me, and when she got on the field, it was just immediate cheering, and they were so excited, and just the look in their eyes. There was a different feeling for me as a mother now, with my two daughters sitting on the couch, watching a woman go out there and have this opportunity, and I got a little bit emotional, I'm not going to lie about it. And my kids were like, Mommy, are you okay? It was just a moment where my two daughters could look at someone who looked just like them and say to themselves, well, I can do that too, or I can go out into a business or a field or a sport where maybe there aren't a lot of people who look like me, and I can go out there and have these types of opportunities. It didn't have to be this deeper moment about what does this mean for football. It's not going to profoundly change the game. I think we can all agree on that. But for this one little moment, my daughters could look and say, hey, I can do anything too. And nobody's going to tell me otherwise. And nobody can stop me from doing what I want to achieve. And it was just a cool moment to share that with them. The cheering and the clapping. We were so excited. Nobody cared what the kickoff looked like. It was just, wow, look at her out there accomplishing something that so many people said could never happen. And I hope I articulated that in the words in the story I'm going to have out later this week. But I know there were a lot of other parents out there, mothers and fathers, who watched with their daughters and their sons and had a similar feeling and a similar reaction, that it didn't matter that what the kickoff was. The fact that somebody out there was breaking down a tiny little barrier, a big barrier, however you want to look at it, was a life lesson that they didn't have to say with words. All they had to say is, look here and look at what this young lady is doing.
That's pretty cool. And your home wasn't the only one, as you mentioned. I saw a ton of home videos throughout social media of young girls and boys watching with their families. And that's just awesome, honestly. And like you said, it didn't matter what the outcome was. She did her job, by the way. The squib kick was perfect and how they wanted it. And for her to execute that under that kind of, I don't want to say pressure, but those kind of circumstances where you're less than a week in and they're like, hey, you're on the team. She did her job. And honestly, I just hope she gets the opportunity this coming weekend to kick a field goal in. And she's put in a good situation by the program to do that. So fingers are crossed. And we'll follow, of course, this story. Can't wait to read your article that will be posted on ESPN.com tomorrow. Andrea, always great to have you on the podcast with us.
Thanks, Kevin. Always appreciate coming on.
Great to have college football senior reporter Ivan Maisel joining us here on the College Football Podcast. Ivan, a lot to cover. And I would think in, let's just say pre-COVID, when we would have you on a show like this, the first thing we would be talking about is Alabama LSU, just because it's Alabama LSU. And then in COVID, during COVID, and in a season where LSU's lost so much, most recently, Terrace Marshall, their wide receiver, as they try to figure out the quarterback position. The spread is 29.5. There's just a lot of things going on here on this when you just look at this game coming in. And one of the other storylines is this is a recruiting type game, too, where it favors Alabama in many rooms down the road afterwards if they were to cover this spread when it comes to recruitment and players who view things on what's current and what's not. When you get ready for a game like this and how unique it is, what stands out to you?
Well, a couple of things, Kevin. You know, for one thing, I think it just highlights what a marvel the program in Alabama has become. I mean, and frankly, the last couple of years, especially with LSU's ascent last year, I thought, well, you know, maybe we've seen the high point under Nick Saban. You know, maybe this is the beginning of a slow descent. And this season has proven, you know, me wrong on that count. I think this offense and defense so far seem to be getting much better every week. You know, the defense flubbed early against Ole Miss, but they've gotten really good. And by contrast, LSU is proving that last year where they were a one-hit wonder. And maybe Ed Orgeron can build them back up again, but this season's been pretty much of a train wreck. And under normal circumstances, maybe Alabama coming off an emotional win against its biggest rival might take its foot off the gas this week. But I think because of that game last year when LSU was pretty dominant over Alabama, I think there's some incentive there for Alabama to be focused and keep their eye on what they so much that they have at stake this year.
How would you describe just the sheer dominance of this Bama team this year? Each season's different, but it feels like, okay, they're back to normal now, back to the defense that we've been used to seeing that we didn't see last year. And they've got a special quarterback that can light it up. And even losing Jalen Waddle and even losing Nick Saban for the week in the Iron Bowl. How would you describe this Bama team? Because it's the one thing that it feels like, hey, we can't count on anything, but the one thing we know we can count on in this 2020 season is Alabama's back.
Well, the only thing that makes me hesitate from saying this is as every bit as good a team as Saban has had is I still don't think they're getting the pass rush that we've seen in past years from the great Alabama teams. But the offense, my goodness, I mean, the stat that I don't think has gotten enough credit, been pumped up enough, is I think the record for scoring 35 points a game in consecutive games was something like 13, and Alabama is up around 21. They've done it 20 or 21 times in a row. They've scored that many points. And as you pointed out, they lost Jalen Waddle. Well, shoot, now they're only down to two all-world receivers, and Smith and Mechie. So two good tight ends, an offensive line that's terrific, probably a Doak Walker, certainly finalist in Najee Harris, if not winner. This offense is as complete as we've seen in recent years.
And a guy that's, you could say right now, top two in the conversation when it comes to the Heisman race, and Mac Jones.
And how he's, I didn't even mention quarterback.
which is kind of stunning. And we briefly talked about this on Monday, where you look at you look at Alabama and you look at all the talent at quarterback over the last few years and all the conversations of the Jalen Hurts and the Tua Tagovailoas and Tua's younger brother and Bryce Young. And then there's Mac Jones saying, hey, look at me and look at these numbers. And call me quarterback, right?
Well, the coolest thing to me about Mac Jones is he's an old school success story. It used to be that you bided your time and you learned the system. And Bobby Bowden was a master at this. By year three, if not year four, you were, quote, ready to go in. College football isn't that way anymore. Kids, especially quarterbacks, want to get on the field early, and if they don't, they're gone. And Mac Jones was content to learn, to study, to stay behind Tagovailoa. And when he got his chance, he was ready. And it's just it's the way things used to be, and that's a model that's barely recognizable anymore.
Mm-hmm. Because the minute they come in, you don't want to lose the kid too, right? Because the transferring process, if they're not getting that playing time, if there's no hope there, bye-bye, we're moving on to another big program. So you've got there is no patience on when it comes to college football on staying on a roster. And
that's why Ohio State has a quarterback and Georgia doesn't.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah.
100%. And then that's a reason why Georgia has a quarterback and USC went with somebody else, right? So it's a domino effect here. But that's just the state of the game here. And let's focus on the state of the game with another big story. And it's going to be coming out tomorrow, a piece that you've wrote covering diversity in the coaching ranks. And, the numbers are not positive, and they took a hit earlier this week with Derek Mason being fired at Vanderbilt after an 0-8 start and the struggles there with that program. And we all here, we know what Derek can do, and we like Derek. Vandy's just a really tough place to win consistently year in and year out in the conference. And Derek will jump on his feet and find another spot as a coordinator. You hope he gets another opportunity as a head coach. What's the piece about when it comes to diversity in the coaching ranks in college football?
Well, Kevin, we're getting toward hiring season now, and it just occurred to me that I've been writing the story of there being not enough black head coaches. I've been writing that story virtually my entire career. You know, I wrote it for the first time in the early 90s. I wrote it in the late 90s. I've written it again a few more times. So this time, rather than write the same story again, I just started asking people, why has this generation of athletic administrators failed to resolve this issue? Why is it that we have 10% black head coaches in a sport in which half the players are black? And yet there aren't a lot of really pat answers or easy answers, but people were honest, and both coaches and administrators, and discussed what's held things back, what needs to happen for change to occur. And I feel like I think people are more intent than ever to make changes. But, again, people have talked a good game for many, many years. So we just have to, we'll find out in the next couple of months if anybody's more serious. I'll tell you this. It's astounding to me that of the five Power Five conferences, two of them do not have a single black head coach, the Big 12 and now the SEC. It's amazing.
Wow. I didn't know that. That is incredible to even think coming into the season there was only one combined in those two conferences as well. And I look forward to the story on ESPN.com. That will be Thursday. Ivan, always great to have you on the podcast. We look forward to talking to you sometime in December as we kind of get some clarity on who's getting in and who's going to be sitting at home when it comes to the playoff.
Okay. Thanks, Kevin.
That'll do it for this podcast on Wednesday. Great to have Ivan Maisel, Andrea Adelson joining us, and check out their pieces on ESPN.com on Thursday. And of course, David Pollack here getting us ready for the upcoming weekend. If you enjoyed the podcast, subscribe, rate, and review. We love to hear the feedback. It just makes us better. So if you like something, let us know. If there's something we can work on to get better, let us know, and we'll go from there. Of course, Taylor Schwenk, you will not say one bad thing about him because he is the best producer in the business here with us putting this podcast together. Much thanks to him. And if you want more football, keep your fingers crossed, social distance, wear a mask, and stay safe and healthy.